The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of the Board of Directors, staff, or volunteers of CKMS, FM, Radio Waterloo, or its affiliate sponsors or advertisers.
Listening to CCC, we're starting back up our Community Connections program, and we're here with DJ Guts and DJ Steel, and I'm Yenny. So thanks for listening to CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo here during these COVID times. The station is trying to do its thing to stay involved with the community, and for us as people, everybody is sort of doing their thing, and this is what we do. And so Rob has been with the station, DJ Steel has been with the station for many years. And I just mentioned earlier, I know DJ Guts is fairly new on board now, but I know there's got a lot of knowledge.
I've heard of the great DJ Steel.
Right. So thanks for coming on the show. And talk to us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I can't remember the exact year. I think it was 2008 or 2009 when I joined with CKMS, and at that time it was just before it left the Bauer Warehouse, I think it was called. And so I just wanted to start as a community member programming on it. We an earlier band that I was in called Cyanide Kiss went on it a few times with Arda Ocal's program. He had a show. Arda Ocal started with CKMS, and then he went and started as a talk show host on The Score, and then was with the WWE for a while as he changed his name. He wasn't Arda Ocal in the WWE. He was Kevin something or other, just an interviewing personality. And then went back to The Score, and I'm not sure exactly what he's with now, but we were on his show a couple times, which is what got me into it. And then I got in probably the year it was going through the troubles, and then it left the station and then moved to all the different locations with it. So that's how I had kind of a unique perspective of all the different locations that the station had been through, and talked with a bunch of people from each of the different locations, and was able to get video from each of the different locations, and then put together that documentary.
Oh, I know that guy you were talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, about the station there. Yeah.
That's so sweet. And you're actually who trained me when I first started my show. I met you, and I believe Adam, and you guys were the ones that taught me how to do radio.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
That was in Waterloo, yeah, or off King Street there, by Central.
Okay, yeah, right by the subway or whatever, Mr. Sub.
Right. Yeah, that's
nice.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. Our show kind of doubled as our show and the training time. So whenever new people started, we did a whole bunch of training back then. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And that was awesome.
I wonder about back in the early days of DJ Steel, Rob McKenna. So with music, what was your first experiences with creating music, or even just, you know, when you realized maybe music was something that you liked?
Interestingly enough, so with all the changes and things that are going on right now because of COVID, I'm finding myself with where I work, my day work, having to teach intro to guitar. And I was thinking a lot about way back when I was in high school and took intro to guitar. That was probably my first introduction to music. And I took it with a friend of mine, and we would just, like, it was a lot of practice time where you would sit and practice learn songs and things like that. And I remember the one day the teacher brought in an electric guitar, and he had it up, hooked up with just like a drum machine that he would put on the computer, and you could play with the drum machine. And I again, it was intro to guitar, but he said, does anyone want to come up and in front of the class and try an electric guitar? And nobody wanted to, but I thought, yeah, what the heck, I'll try it. So I went up.
You can handle the power.
Yeah, right. Given the opportunity, I got to try it out. So I went up, and it was just so much fun. Like, he had a little bit of distortion or overdrive or something on it, and I didn't know what I was doing, but it exactly like what you said, it was just so much power. Like, you would just play that, and it was so loud and everything. And at the time, I didn't even really think of how it sounded. I just couldn't believe that was me, like, strumming along here, and everyone was forced to listen because I was so loud in the classroom. So that was probably the start of electric guitar.
You take that big E chord, and it's like the vibrations go through your body, and you become the you're almost strumming with the your body is going with the vibes of the guitar. You are a part of that. You become one instrument almost.
It's something like that. Like, so many artists will say that they just absolutely love performing live, and I think it's something to do with that. Like, people will even ask, like, we'll play a show or whatever, and they say, well, what, like, if you just love music so much, why don't you just create it? Why do you have to perform it in front of people? Or, like, why don't you just jam in your basement and play it? And yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's something with being in front of people, and there's like a little bit of nerves and a little bit of like that connection that maybe sometimes you do something and it connects with people. And I don't know exactly, I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but just something about that is really intriguing, I think, to a lot of people, and that's why they do it. So,
when was the first time you got to, what was your first instrument? What was your first guitar?
I think I still have it probably hanging somewhere back there. I don't know if it can be seen. No, I think it's somewhere in the corner. Okay. But it was just, oh, there goes my, it was just a cheap guitar, kind of like a Strat imitation, a Sunburst Strat imitation that I got. And I think it was after I took the guitar class and liked it so much, my parents got me that for Christmas the one year.
Nice.
Nice.
Best Christmas present ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
When was your first time where you were experiencing with recording some of your jams? What got you into the production process of things?
Okay. So, after I played guitar a little bit, it's weird because there are different musicians will say that they write differently. And if you look at some musicians, they have a harder time writing and they really work at it a lot. And like, there are some great musicians who only have like one album, but they put so much work into that one album and it's amazing. And then there's other musicians who just write, like, they're prolific writers and they just are writing music all the time. And right away I felt like a lot of music was coming to me, and I wasn't super great, but I was getting these ideas. And so I was playing a whole bunch, and I was worried. I remember being worried that I would not be able to record it and get these ideas down, because it's easy to forget. You play out a riff and it's easy to forget how to play it, or the strumming or the rhythm or whatever. And so I would practice these couple songs that I wrote quite a bit. And then when I was done high school, my brother ended up buying a drum kit, And together we started putting together a whole little home recording studio, but it ran through like a tape player with a computer attached. And
cool.
It was the worst home recording studio ever,
but it worked.
It got some ideas down onto a tape cassette, and then we could remember these ideas. And then a couple friends of mine, DJ Adrock, and another friend of mine, they all wanted to be a part of a band too. So we started playing in Hamilton a whole bunch. And then a few people at, I can't remember what the recording studio is now, but they heard, like they just heard us play, like, cause they were always at this venue called the Underground. And they heard us play, and then they asked if we wanted to record with them. And so, and pay them, obviously, but they asked us if we wanted to record with them. So we put together the money and went in and recorded. And their stuff was so unbelievable. Like, they had, like, super professional stuff. And the guy, Robin Abe, was showing me and teaching me all through it. And so after that, the whole weekend, I don't know, ended up costing us like $3,000 or something like that. And so in the future, I thought, like, that's instead of spending that on recording one album, like maybe I could slowly over time put together like money and technology to build that so that we can get better recording ourselves and just work like do what we can for this album. And then for the next album, if we have a little bit more money, we'll put that into a little bit more tech and then build up kind of this library. So like kind of the things that you see behind me, I didn't get all at once. These are years and years of collecting. So
you kind of took the reins. You said, I'm going to control my destiny and I'm going to make sure that I have the comfortable position to expand on your own terms, basically.
Yeah, the first album, which for Cyanide Kiss, it's definitely the best sounding album because it was a professional recording studio. The second one, it sounds all right for what it is, which is completely learning how to record everything. Like it definitely sounds like we started strong and then dropped a level, but then each one after, it's like progressing from that one with learning how to record and mix and master and all these different parts that, and even just learning it. Like I remember watching a YouTube video with mastering, and the guy was saying, okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to apply this compression to the overall sound here. And he would apply the compression, and he's like, see how much better that sounds? And I'd be listening, thinking, I don't hear anything different. So
right.
You almost have to tune your ears for what it's doing, because like the mastering stage is so, you're almost not listening to the overall sound, but you're listening to, when they say the shape of each of the instruments, like if you listen to a track, you just hear the overall sound of it. And sometimes if you hear a muddy track, you'll kind of hear that the bass blends in with the organ and different things like that. And it may still sound great that way. But if you listen to a real professional, like a lot of the top 20 or top 30 hits of the year, Rolling Stones hits, if you listen to it, you can really hear, oh, that's the guitar and that's the bass and they have this instrument. Right. So there's a lot of shape around the instruments, and it's tricky to do, which is why even those mastering people get paid the big bucks to do these big albums.
It's a big job. And some of that stuff comes back to some influences too. Maybe the shapes of the instruments that you were talking about there, maybe the ideas that you have, maybe it's shaped by some of your own influences from growing up or maybe at the time. So what are some of the musicians and what are some of the other musical acts that kind of inspired you, that shaped all that?
I think initially I was a huge fan of the Smashing Pumpkins, and people used to say a lot that Cyanide Kiss sounded like the Smashing Pumpkins, like the, okay. or that we were trying to sound like the Smashing Pumpkins. I don't know if we were nowhere near on that level, but what really kind of opened me up musically was DJing at CKMS, because then all that new music coming in and DJing with Adam or DJ Adrock, he has got like a completely different, not completely different, but a different taste in alternative rock music than I do. And so we would go back and forth a lot on the show with songs that we would play, and his tastes were very different. I always thought, like, you are just, we would have battles, and whoever played better songs won that week. And I would always just think, I'm going to destroy you based upon the songs that you're playing. But different people connect with different types of music. And so a lot of the times he would win. So and so people connected with that different type of music. And it really opened my eyes to a lot of different Canadian music, especially. And so it made me appreciate all these different Canadian bands. And I got into a lot more different types of music.
Okay.
And like the stuff that you're working on now, because I'm fairly new to your bands, like Robot Apocalypse and All Weather Haulage. I was just listening to the show, and it's amazing. Like, I want a t-shirt, definitely. Like, I just can't believe what you created. It's amazing. Like, this is, congratulations. So you have some amazing collaborations, too, on the one, there's violinists, right? And so what have you accomplished? Like, Smashing Pumpkins to where you're at now, that's like, it's like a new universe of growth and experience.
Yeah, so a lot of the collaborators, like once I started programming and appreciating all these other bands, and Cyanide Kiss had broken up, we got the idea for this. We were making an audio comic for CKMS, and we had a grant from the city of Waterloo and the city of Kitchener, and we had some money left over. And so we thought, maybe in the second season, we'll record some of our own music and then get collaborators to collaborate upon those songs with us. And maybe we could, like, if we could get somebody, like we were Hot Hot Heat fans as well. And so we thought, if we could get someone like Steve Bays to record with us, that would be like unbelievable. He's toured all over the world as like a famous Canadian musician. And so we approached him, and we've done an interview with him, and we've seen a bunch of his bands play, and he was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And so he recorded with us, and then we were all like super excited about that. And we thought, well, maybe let's ask one of the guys at 5440. And the thing is, we thought, well, we'll ask them. And if they say no, well, then we're no worse off than before. Mm-hmm. We'll just ask somebody else. Mm-hmm. And more people started saying, yeah, sure, we'll do that. And so it just kept building. And then we put together, I think, four or five tracks for that season of
The Electrifying Adventures of,
that's right. Oh yeah,
Jeffy, you were Jeff. In it. Yeah. Yes, there is, and it almost looks exactly how I my attire is now. The character in the series there. For the people out there, I believe that's on RadioWaterloo.ca. If you search in there up on the search bar, yeah, you should be able to pull that up from a couple years. That was already 4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, I think the first season, we started recording in 2014 and maybe released it. No, I think we did it in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then the second season in maybe 2017. I could be wrong, but something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. original content produced by someone at CKMS. It's pretty unique stuff. I had suggested, I think that there are some talk about there being some radio plays or something like that in the future on CKMS, and it'd be cool to bring out, dust off the old Electrifying Adventure series, especially considering that. So basically, that's just the early days of Robot Apocalypse.
Yeah, that's what got it going. And then we just started, like, speaking of influences, we just started thinking, these are the bands that we like. Let's ask them if they'll collaborate with us. And so, like, there are ones that don't reply because they're so huge that they probably get so many messages like that, mm-hmm. and they just brush it off. But with all the recording technology now and at-home recording and social media and stuff like that, a lot of these bands are so much more approachable, and it's unbelievable the kind of the collaborations that they'll do, especially when they know that the project will come together, because we've interviewed them before for radio and things like that. So we have this past relationship with them. So,
speaking of the studio and the gear, I don't know if you're able to show us right now, but if you could, though, take us through some of the things, at least verbally. What's some of the gear that you got? What's some of the technology that you're speaking of here?
So for recording what I started out recording on, I can probably grab it.
Sure. Yeah, it gives more time for people to look at all the cool stuff. I like the custom guitar there and the background.
Oh, yeah.
That blue, very sharp. It looks like it could stab somebody if you're not looking around properly. Do you bring that to live gigs, and did someone ever walk into that and poke an eye out?
No, I used to play with that one for a while, and in Cyanide Kiss, and it's such a harsh sounding guitar. It's a Japanese Hondo guitar, and it's so twangy when you play it but it looks so cool that I even had someone from another band offer me $400 on the spot to buy it off me just because it looks so cool.
Right.
But I didn't want to sell it. So, that
good
one
right there.
That one I used for Cyanide Kiss. And then eventually, I have like a Paul Stanley Kiss guitar that, I thought it was kind of funny that it was a Kiss guitar and then I would use it for Cyanide Kiss. So, that is the main one that I use for Cyanide Kiss because it was like super deep, and super low tone. So, we had a keyboardist doing all the lead, and then I would use that, and kind of me and Adam would be the bass, and we'd kind of go to get fit together and let the keys do the lead in that project. The custom guitar there is one that I built for Robot Apocalypse. That one, it's got two separate pickups and two separate outputs, so the one, I probably should try and patent this or something, but I thought it was pretty cool. So when Cyanide Kiss broke up, it broke up because Adam had lots going on, so he left. And so I thought, well, how are we going to have bass if he's gone and the three of us are still playing? So in that guitar, I built it so that the top pickup only picks up the top three strings, and it sends it through one output, which I then whammy down a full octave so that it sounds like a bass. And then the bottom pickup picks up all of the strings and sends it out a different output. And then I run that through a guitar effects pedal, and then that keeps it at the regular octave so that I have a bass playing with the guitar all in the one instrument.
Interesting. Hey, that's pretty cool. Maybe you should look into paying into that for a patent.
Yeah, like I don't know what's involved, but all these like white stripes, then they got a bass a guitar all in one right there.
So that's kind of like a Stratocaster-esque. I can see the headstock isn't the trademark Fender, but I can tell it has that when you mentioned Whammy Down, you're able to like whammy bar it down, it kind of, or is there an effect that you could use for that?
Yeah, there's a whammy pedal that you can whammy the whole thing down a full step.
Okay.
And you can whammy it down more, but you can whammy it down a full step. And that's what I do so that it's a full octave lower than what I'm actually playing. And so that the two mix perfectly. I also do some weird things where I think Rage Against the Machine used to use a whammy pedal a lot with their bass just to change notes and things like that. So I'm not as good as that, but I just whammy it up an octave and bend the notes almost like you would with a whammy bar.
Mm-hmm, sure. So you even got some cool concert posters behind it. So that's kind of almost like not a shrine, but definitely that is a cool little nook for collecting stuff. As a collector too, I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, so a lot of them are. I'm just looking. Oh, I even have down in the corner. It's, I don't know if you can see it. Nah. Not really. It's down below the acoustic guitar. There is the CKMS. What was that one? Oh, that was.
Oh, I see a flower in there.
Yeah, it was the CKMS New Frequency Party at the Okay. Bojo.
Cool.
And a bunch of them. The one right above the acoustic guitar there. Oh, I'm right in the way. Is as part of the Mono A Mono show we held at Imbibe, or Imbibe, or it's not there anymore. It was right in front of in Kitchener, the museum. Paul Jago from the Godarvas came out, and then back then we were sponsored, and we had a brewery make a special Mono A Mono beer, and then we had it that night. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And then a bunch of the other ones are just, they're all kind of like a shrine now, because a lot of them are from Starlight, which I think just closed down during the COVID, the whole COVID stuff. Some of them are from Hamilton and the area. Yeah. I usually, when I'm at the show, the best place, and I'm probably giving this away and now people will go and do this. The best place is you go into the show before the band starts. You go straight to the washroom, and they don't like you taking down future show posters, but they don't mind if you take down the show poster for that night, because the future ones are advertisement for the people who are there. But nobody goes into the washroom and grabs the show poster. So that's what I do. I go right to the washroom and check if there's that night's show poster.
That's okay. Maybe people are going to end up taking some of that into their own. It almost continues on. You can tell behind you there's some amplifiers there. Maybe depending on what you're recording, I imagine using them all at once is probably not a good idea, but you probably could. But I'm imagining each one has its own unique sound, and maybe whatever you're jamming, you'll go with one. What's that? What's that all about?
For band practice, we usually use all of them. The Dean Markley is a tube amp, so it does have a pretty thick sound. But lately I've been using this Cordavox over here that it's actually, when I was filming the Radio Waterloo documentary, I went to the location on Waterloo Street, the one that was like on the second floor of that place. When I was there, there was a guy throwing out this amp, and he said, "Oh yeah, it works and everything. If you want it, just take it." So I pulled my car up and I grabbed that amp. Mm-hmm. And, right away when we got it, back to our practice space wasn't here. It was at my brother's place then. We blew it. We blew some of the amplification in it right away. And so then we had this amp head. And then recently I had it sitting in my garage for so long. I thought, I'm gonna see if I can wire this thing up and put it together and get something working again. And the amp head has kind of got, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4 inputs to it. So I use it as I can connect the bass, I can connect the guitar, I can connect my analog synth stuff that I've got over there.
Interesting.
And I use that one as my amp. And then the bottom one there is a bass amp that we sometimes run. My brother built a hybrid electric drum kit mixed with a regular sounding drum kit. And so he runs the bass drum through that. And then we've got the extra Dean Markley for keyboards or vocals now. So
cool. So, and if you have some other equipment, I don't know, you said you're going to pull out one of your earlier pieces of equipment there. Just so that our viewers and listeners. Okay, cool. So that's something. So basically that, is that something you could put a cassette into, or is that you could put to a computer?
So this one, it said on it that you could put it to a computer. When I connected it, it was hard to do, and this one's older. But so this one has got, you've got 8 inputs, and it will record each of those 8 inputs onto its own track. And then with all your sliders and stuff like that, you can mix the tracks down. And then it's got a built-in, when CD was big, CD player.
Right.
And then you could export it onto a CD. This has got built-in mastering and everything. When I bought this, I bought this a long, long time ago, and this thing was really expensive. Mm. Now you can find this exact thing like on Kijiji or something for, I don't know, $500 or...
Right. Which is still, that's still pretty good for,
yeah,
for something old. Not like it's going for like $25 or anything like that.
No, but if you want, like, there are smaller ones too. But at the time, we wanted we needed as many tracks for recording as we could, and we were even cheating at the time. Like we had, We had my brother playing a fully electronic kit. And the first album, like at the time we were recording it, we thought it sounded amazing, but a fully electronic kit sounds really fake in a recording. So that's when he started building it into a hybrid kit so that when you're playing, you can hear some of the room in with the mix and things like that. So we've been learning as we go. And so I just have... it can kind of be seen over there. It's pretty much this thing, but newer. Mm-hmm. I can hold it up.
Which is, so something like that would be used to... Okay.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And then, so basically for people that are watching, like everything would go through there, and then I'm guessing that would go to your computer, and then you would have some software running that would record it, or you could... I don't know if you'd use GarageBand or Pro Studio or something like that, but I guess that could be an option. That is a pretty nifty high-tech gadget there.
Yeah, so though that recorder, I don't know, this is an older webcam, it does that sometimes. That recorder there is... it's pretty much that. It can handle 8 simultaneously. And it records to an SD card. So you can take that out and you can just throw it in your computer, and then you can import all the tracks. I have used GarageBand a little bit, but something like the track that I sent you guys with all the with all those instruments, we had a quartet. So there were four string members.
The Raptors Lose. That was really cool.
Oh, thanks. So there were 4 string members: me on bass, Matt on guitar or on synthesizer, and then my brother on drums. And he had a bunch of drum mics set up. And so with that, because GarageBand only allows you, I think it's 16 tracks, we recorded it in 2 parts, and so we had all those tracks, and then on the same song, the ending where it comes back in, we actually recorded that separate. It isn't one flowing song. And So it would have been way too many. So I actually do some recording on Audacity. Audition.
Audition. Both are good. Audition a little bit more. I prefer Audition myself. I use Audition as well. A lot of the stuff that you've done and to get into the Radio Waterloo side of things, a lot of this maybe does mix into a lot of the stuff that you've done. And the musician you are, some of it has kind of tied into the passion of community radio. What happened with the connection with that and to this current day? What's going on with that?
Yeah, I think after Cyanide Kiss kind of stopped playing, then I got into community radio, found out about all these different bands and things like that, set up the audio comic. I think I just like being involved in something musical. So we get an idea and then we start pursuing, seeing how we can put that together. And then the audio comic kind of facilitated the Robot Apocalypse recording. So then we started doing the Robot Apocalypse recording. And then just with the whole COVID and lockdown and stuff like that, as I was going, I was collecting all these like analog synthesizers, like this thing here, which is cool. This one is a drum sequencer.
Oh wow.
And so you program into it. I collected this a while ago, and I've got like a couple analog synths and stuff over there. And it's just a lot of wires. You're playing with wires and buttons. And so you don't need to be like really good theory wise at music to play this stuff. Like, does that sound good? No, I'm going to push less of that button. Mm-hmm. And but I had never learned how to use it. But then with all the lockdown stuff, I thought this is a good opportunity for me to, I'm stuck at home, not doing anything. I may as well connect all this stuff up. And then that's when I started recording all kind of my analog synth type album, which is mainly instrumental, but there's a little bit of kind of sample talkings that I intersperse in amongst it. So.
So is that all Weather Haulage?
Yeah. So that, yeah, and that's
really cool.
That name I got, there's a, the book series, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, they call it the fifth book in the trilogy, the fifth book in the something like that. I don't know. I think it's the fourth or fifth book is called So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. And there's the chapter two of it starts out, and it's the only chapter in the whole trilogy that this character is mentioned. His name is Rob McKenna, and he has an all-weather haulage service. And it just talks about him for the one chapter, and then he has no part in any of the storyline or anything else. It's just in there for some reason.
Cool.
And so that's where I went with the name, because it had the exact same name as me for some reason.
Interesting. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Pretty cool origins of that. So you've had a show with CKMS for how long now?
It's about 12 years. 12 or 13 years. I can't remember if the station left in 2008 or 2009, but whatever year it left the Bauer Warehouse, I started that year.
Okay.
That's so cool. That's a long time, eh?
Yeah. And it doesn't, it doesn't feel like it really, but like looking back, all those moves, like it just seems like it just happens, but yeah, it happens over time. Yeah.
Should we listen to some of your music? Have we come to the point where we get to listen to what you've accomplished? So one, the All Weather Haulage is basically you, Rob McKenna, and then Robot Apocalypse is collaborations with many different people and some constant band members.
Yeah. For All Weather Haulage, it was a bunch of people had left. And I didn't know really if I would have a band again. So I just wanted to still record and just even small scale. Like initially, there's another All Weather Haulage album on the Mono A Mono Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. And it's just like me playing with acoustic instruments. A lot of them that I got out of the garbage or free off Kijiji or things like that, just to try and put an album together with these instruments. And so I don't know. I just try things that I know. If I brought a song with all these like rained out instruments that sounded terrible to a Robot Apocalypse practice, I know that my brother and Matt would be like, no, that sounds like junk. We're not using that. So the All Weather Haulage is kind of an experimentation thing where I can just kind of do stuff without someone saying, no, that doesn't sound good enough for this. So,
okay. Yeah.
There's some tunes there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was beautiful. I was in my kitchen and I just turned it on. You sent this to us just before we started this. And I was like, this is beautiful. I want a t-shirt.
Oh. Well, thank you.
And there's some cool music videos that you posted as well. I saw in the summertime of the All Weather Haulage music. And you used a drone to record some of those. That's pretty cool. I love that that side of things. Drones are cool, and you had some really good shots of the river there, and it really put you in a sense, because it kind of feels like it's ambient music. So with that visual side of things, it is very relaxing almost.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that was kind of the idea with that. I feel like it is almost like an ambient, just looking out at a nice. A nice summer landscape or something mm-hmm. like that, which doesn't make for a great music video in topping any charts or anything, but I don't know. I guess isn't really a goal. It's more for experimentation.
Right. It's still cool though. And so for people that are watching and listening, is there any links or social media handles that you can plug right now that people can go to? That we can direct people to?
So the main one, like if people went to mamradio.ca, that on there, I've kind of adapted Mono A Mono Radio into a little bit of a promotion website for the different recording things. So my brother did the same thing when he was at home and he wasn't recording. He set up a little band called Audio Boffins. So, and then he gets me to master some of it and put it on that Bandcamp. So there's Audio Boffins, there's Old Cyanide Kiss on there. He went and recorded an album in an old, like an old cottage in somewhere in Montreal or something. And so he's got another little group with his friends called Green Tree Frogs. And then it's got Robot Apocalypse and some All Weather Haulage on there as well.
Okay, cool. And I think RadioWaterloo.ca also has, if you just search any one of those, basically, something you'll probably get something that'll come up.
Probably, yeah. I play myself every so often, so I'm sure I put some stuff up there.
Yeah. Facebook or Twitter, is there a place on social media that people can go like?
There is a
Mono Robot Mono's Apocalypse page too as well.
Yeah, there's a Robot Apocalypse Facebook page, and I think there's Instagram pages.
Instagram, yeah, I follow you guys there.
Okay. Yeah. So good places for people if they would like to follow. And also, you know, before we wrap this up here, just in the next minute or so, I'd like to thank Rob McKenna again. We feel like we just barely scratched the surface, so I'm sure we'll have you on again down the road.
Well, thanks for having me. This was fun showing off all my gear here. I haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, hopefully we could do a jam maybe down the road when things are obviously better and a jam, but to, I want to understand the recording process myself. So to physically do it, to learn it and show it, and that'd be something cool, like a Radio Waterloo jam.
Yeah, I actually, you saying that reminds me, I should have been interviewing you guys for some of this, because you guys are performing members of the Robot Apocalypse.
Yeah, yes. So check that out on the internet. It's up.
That was a lot of fun. Yes, experimenting with music is awesome.
Yeah.
And inviting members of the audience. Yeah, that was cool.
It's a good. It was pretty good.
Yeah, we'll have to do one of those again.
Yeah, that was super fun.
All right. Thank you again, Rob.
All right. Thank you, guys.
We'll be right back.